are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, July 5th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, North Korea now at a crisis point, launching an intercontinental ballistic missile test successfully. Also on the program today, assuming we're still around, Republican senators get slammed on health care during their July 4th celebrations. And newsflash, Republicans still love Donald Trump. Meanwhile, Chris Christie, the former darling of the alt-center, now the loneliest man in the world. Donald Trump starts his European vacation backpacking throughout Europe with Putin as his aides fear what they'll talk about. Sorry, Europe. DC Circuit Court tells the EPA it must do its job. And 44 states tell Kris Kobach and his voter suppression panel to suck it. You can't have private information. Meanwhile, Canada compensates and apologizes to a former Guantanamo Bay prisoner. And the House Republicans can't release a budget until they agree on how much children should suffer. And lastly, the science division in the White House Office of Science and Technology is now gone. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. I hope you had a happy 4th of July and a good weekend. I assume everybody here, Matt, Kelly, Michael, all had fun times.
Tremendous.
Great.
Well, tremendous.
I mean, great times. I'm just saying that.
I had a good time.
I like taking you up on those fake offers of yours.
I'm not asking. I'm just said I trust that you did.
I trust.
And
wasn't even a fake opening.
I sort of think probably most of you did not. I mean, Matt probably just got high and played video games.
That's a good time for Matt.
Peak, but everybody else probably there was some problem.
No,
I got high in the sense that I was on a rooftop.
Nice, nice. Did you watch the fireworks?
Hi, Mrs.
I didn't have a good angle of the fireworks.
No good angle of the fireworks.
Kelly? But I've been there, done that.
You've seen fireworks before. Everybody here, I think, is old enough that fireworks are not as quite as exciting.
Yeah, they're. I don't get the whole fireworks excitement thing, but no, my neighbors always have barbecue, and so I participate in that, and then my dog freaks out.
Great.
I'm sure you had a great time.
I had a great time.
Your typical fun time having pleasant to be around ways.
Yes, it was.
It was so fun. Ow, so my ears hurt. God damn it.
I have now, you know, like 25 years ago when I would watch fireworks, I would just start getting angry that we were like, oh, this would be great. This is fun. We're bombing places around the world right now. And then we're pretending like we're getting bombed, but it doesn't hurt us. That's basically what the fireworks are,
and that's similar thoughts.
So I would get
sometimes I would drink too much
and I would get angry on a roof somewhere. Unfortunately, the people I hung out with would just go along with that, and they would all get angry too. And
sometimes people do get hurt by the fireworks, like
that's true.
Maybe that would make you feel better.
Yes, I mean people sometimes just get hurt at a party because they slip because someone spilled a drink, and so I mean that happens.
No, but
all right, let's get onto this. One bit of house cleaning. You've heard me say at the beginning of this program that we are a four-time award-winning show. We have won the podcast awards at podcastawards.com four times. We won it 4 times in a row, but only 4 times out of the past 5 years. Why? Because last year they had a rule change where if you had won 4 times over the past 5 years, you had to become a legacy show and you couldn't participate. Well, they have changed that rule again to it's 5 times. So we're now eligible to win. So all you got to do is head over to podcastawards.com and you can nominate the show. And I'm trying to see like where you nominate it. Nominations are open. Oh, you can just, okay. So click here right at the top. You click there and
you have to verify yourself through email.
Yes, you got to create an account
because they had a little process.
They had a little bit of a problem last time, I guess. People were setting up fake accounts.
I thought what Pac-Man did was disgraceful.
It was a real shame. It was a real shame he had to ruin it for everybody. But there it is. And you go in, you log in, and you nominate the show, The Majority Report. And
For news and politics.
Yeah. And then we vote. We will vote. You will vote for us, hopefully, down the road. All right, I wanted to get that out of the way. I want to get to some of these news stories. But last week we referenced this briefly, that California's single-payer legislation is basically stalled, sidelined, specifically by the California Assembly Speaker, Anthony Rendon, who shelved it, at least for this year. Now, people should see this in context. First off, Rendon, is clearly sort of making it easier for some of the more conservative members of the California Assembly to avoid a vote. However, with that said, and the bill is SB 562, David Dayan did a really good piece on this that I think lays out the argument, lays out the argument in what I think is a very succinct and clear way, that the bill as presented was never going to go anywhere because California has, in response to Proposition 13, which we've talked about on the show, because it came to Massachusetts, Proposition 13, back in the 80s. In fact, and it basically said it limited the amount of property taxes that could be raised, and it decimated the schools in Massachusetts. I presume it did something like that in California. But I remember the year that that happened. Well, in 1988, there was a response to California's Proposition 13, which was Proposition 98. And it required that roughly 40% of all the general fund revenues in California's general fund go to K-12 education. So understand what that means. I'm just going to use simple numbers here because I don't know the California budget numbers, and they're much bigger than this. But and I've got to keep everything in round numbers because I don't want to have to involve math in this too specifically.
Yeah, we've got to.
But if you have a $100 million budget, at least $40 million of it needs to go to education. To raise the taxes for single payer healthcare, I'm gonna pick a number in this little hypothetical world I'm talking about. Let's say you need $100 million more to pay for single payer healthcare in California. So now the general budget is $200 million, which means statutorily that $80 million needs to go to education. In other words, of the $100 million that you raised to pay for single payer, $40 million of that is taken away. So you'd actually need to raise $200 million, or like closer to $150 million, $160 million to pay for the $100 million for single payer. So what needs to happen in California is there needs to be a referendum, because California is all referendumry, that either provides a permanent waiver when it comes to revenues derived specifically for single payer, or unshackles them from that dynamic. And Dane makes the argument in this piece that no one, that even though this guy, Rendon, certainly is a bit of a corporatist and certainly protecting his assembly members, but no one in the community who is arguing for this, none of the big constituencies, the California Nurses Association, which is a very strong union out there, the nurses unions across the country are great. California's not exactly the same as the national one, but these are very aggressive, very strong, and good unions. It's just that Dane is saying that there are outside groups, and even the union is not being honest with supporters of single payer, and wasting in many respects the energy that's going in there for something that they know the process in which they're following cannot lead to this, because there is a constitutional problem in California. So the bottom line is, people need to be more honest with what they're doing, instead of just trying to whatever gain they're trying to get out of this. I mean, it's not hard to look at some of these outside groups and say, hey, I understand what the value is for them. They can keep saying, send us money to promote single payer, when they know it can't happen unless this referendum is addressed, and they're not telling the people that they're raising money from, and they don't seem to have any plans to raise the enormous amount of money you need for a statewide referendum. So there's a little bit of disingenuousness involved in this. And you can see this down the line, right? It's a freebie. I don't think Dayan's in any way apologizing for Rendon, but it is a way for a lot of people to take sort of a free shot without really genuinely either knowing what they're talking about or specifically not informing their constituencies for what it's actually going to take. And that's a recipe for a lot of people becoming disenchanted and disillusioned in the process. You promise them a pie in the sky, and you don't tell them, oh, but we got to spend a lot of time building a ladder. It's just as if the pie in the sky is going to descend down. No, you're going to have to climb up there. If you don't tell people what's involved in it, you're going to see that once it doesn't show up, they're going to become disillusioned and walk away from the whole process. So worth checking out his piece at The Intercept. Are we going to do those spots? We're not going to do those spots today. No? Okay. All right, let's get into North Korea for a moment. This is what's going on. North Korea fired an intercontinental ballistic missile. It normally will send this between continents, which is why they call it an intercontinental ballistic missile.
That's the type of nuanced analysis you get from the show.
No other shows will tell you stuff like that.
Can you slow down a little
bit? They'll just make you go throughout the day.
But here's
the thing. This is what they did. They shot it almost straight up in the air. So they were trying to measure two things. One, distance that they could propel this thing, and its ability to re-enter. I guess it's got to go outside of like some layer of the atmosphere to re-enter and still be intact. So they shot it about 1,700 miles up in the air, which apparently expert in this country are saying that gives it a range of 4,100 miles, which basically includes Alaska, part of Canada. It is not clear that they have the technology yet to make a nuclear weapon small enough to fit in the tip of this thing. But
very far from.
But having a functional intercontinental ballistic missile has been a line which people have dropped and said it's a problem once they get past this. The North Korean Central News Agency said its new intercontinental ballistic missile, the Hwasong-14, was capable of hitting the heart of the United States with large, heavy nuclear warheads. Like we said, that seems like a bit of an exaggeration, but Kim Jong-un had this to say. Quote, "The American bastards must be quite unhappy after closely watching our strategic decision." That's according to the news agency.
Clip it for the show.
"I guess they're not too happy with the gift package we sent them for the occasion of their Independence Day."
We got to keep them interested.
"We should often send them gift packages so they won't be too bored."
Oh, my God. This guy is proving more and more every day he's got more balls than his dad.
I mean, but it's
really
also
outdoing his dad.
It's basically, and apparently Mr. Kim, according to the news agency, made those remarks with a guffaw.
He definitely looks like he could do a guffaw.
The point being
yeah,
is
like
that,
very
much
so.
I mean, the only difference between Un and Trump seems to be he has a little bit better syntax.
Un has better syntax and
more command of the English language.
He's more successfully taken over his inherited business.
Shen, we're going to send you to North Korea and have you study up on how you do the duties of a press secretary.
Shen, why can't you say anything like that?
All right, look, I don't know what the answer to this is. We don't have the ability to easily knock out their nuclear program because of bunkers and whatnot. We could decimate some aspects of their firepower, but they would probably end up killing anywhere from what I've read 200,000 to 500,000 South Koreans.
They
before
could immediately just shell Seoul with conventional weapons.
Yes,
and but the thing that's interesting is definitely that it appears like China's really starting to lose patience with them, and that is the only kind of pressure valve that really could be applied to them. And the other
any technology that North Korea has for the most part is going to have come from China
and some fuel from Russia as well, actually, but those are like the only places that deal with them. Exactly. And China's getting fed up. And the other you know thing though that's scary is that as crazy as the situation is, there's a certain logic to it since like the 90s. Like they test, they escalate.
Well, now wait
we
a second.
Counter
here,
threat.
This is what I want to make clear here, because the a little bit of context is necessary here, because I remember this from the Bush administration. In 1994, Bill Clinton, the warmonger, made a deal with North Korea called the Agreed Framework. Throughout the 90s, for the most part, okay, and this basically, the deal was, we're going to give you, we're going to bribe you, essentially, to not build nuclear weapons. You know, this is the dynamic we hear libertarians saying, why didn't Lincoln just pay for all the slaves? That type of situation, right? Like, isn't that what I was saying? Like, it wasn't
yes, except it made sense in this situation.
Well, in right, this situation, right, it makes right. sense because, look, they need aid. You want to impinge upon their sovereignty to build a weapon that they think that they need. You say, okay, look, we're going to show you another way. Here's aid. We give aid to everybody. And so the idea was we're going to provide cash in some instances, food resources, whatever it was, different other diplomatic concessions. The U.S. did not do a great job in providing what we said we were going to provide through the final years of the Clinton administration. Not a great job. It is understood, though, that North Korea basically towed the line. We were able to put international monitoring in their primary nuclear facility. They basically froze their development and seeking of weapons-grade plutonium, all of this. In October of 2000, before the Bush-Gore election turned into a selection, as you know, Clinton sat down with Kim Jong-il, Un's dad, and said, made a mutual pledge. We will agree that we're going to have no hostile intent towards each other. Specifically, no hostile intent. And when Bush came into office, they just basically literally said, I'm not going to reaffirm that handshake or that, you know, proclamation that we have no hostile intent. You had just about everybody in the Bush administration who was anybody try and torpedo specifically the agreed framework. You'll recall, maybe you won't, but David Frum wrote a speech for George W. Bush. And it referred to, I think, when David Frum supposedly wrote it, it was only two in the Axis of Evil, but there was some slight change to his wording, which is part of David Frum's own Reformation project. But the bottom line is what he was taking credit for at the time was an Axis of Evil that included Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. So by mid-2002, after it was clear not only that the U.S. was not living up to its end of the bargain, but that Bush had come in with a significant amount of hostility, enough to say, like, I'm not going to agree that we don't have hostile intent.
Can I just add one thing? Also directly undermining the South Korean government's policy at the time, which was sunshine. So they not only torpedoed our own relatively successful bilateral one, they screwed their ally, which was pursuing its own parallel track.
Exactly. We're going to do everything we can, not only to not support the agreement we've made in the past, but to isolate you. John Bolton, who was force-fed into this, rammed down our throats in a recess appointment to the United Nations, warned Kim to, quote, draw the appropriate lesson from Iraq. Right?
Okay, I'll restart my nuke program.
And that's exactly what they did. They restarted the Yongbyong reactor. They made more weapons-grade plutonium. Then China, which was concerned, got the U.S. and North Korea to participate in a six-party talks along with South Korea, Japan, and Russia. This is from a piece by a guy named Mike Chinoy, who wrote Meltdown, the Inside Story of the North Korean Crisis. In September of 2005, the parties reached an accord on principles for the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, in which Washington and Pyongyang agreed to respect each other's sovereignty, exist peacefully together, and take steps to normalize their relations. However, on that same week, the Treasury Department designated Macau's Banco Delta Asia, where North Korea maintained dozens of accounts, as a suspected money laundering concern. Because you know how on top of money laundering the Bush administration was. Major priority. And so it was basically a financial sanction on North Korea right after they had agreed to ease it up. And then the six-party talks fell apart. You had the first nuclear test in October of 2006, which followed that. Even after North Korea asked for another round of multi-party talks, the Bush administration said no way. In 2007, Chinese again set up six party talks. Washington basically said, we're not coming unless Pyongyang accepts inspections that were so intrusive. One American official, according to Mike Chinoy, described them as a, quote, national proctologic exam. At that point, you had conservative governments in Seoul and Tokyo, and they moved to halt energy and promised in the 2007 deal, unless North Korea agreed to the new verification members, they would cut off any aid they were giving them at that time. Pyongyang said, fine, goodbye, we're all done. Everything, we get it. We get it. You guys are dicks.
And now, that's exactly what happened. And then, but even in that really twisted dynamic, there was like this certain, both sides would push it to the brink and then step back a little bit. And now it's like, you know, with Trump, does he even have the ability to do something like
right? And what this shows, like that. I mean, this shows like how what George Bush did in 2002 ripples out, and it's like one of those death kidney punches, right? You get it, you walk around for 3 weeks, you think you're fine, then all of a sudden you drop dead because your kidneys collapse or something. I don't know. Maybe those are made up punches. But my point being is the theoretical death kidney punch.
I wish I could do Bush as good as you, because it could lie like, see another Jackie, and also another Bruce Lee fan here.
I would add, every time you retweet David Frum, know that more than your average Joe that you're retweeting, he owns a bit, a little bit. You know, in the event that we end up seeing an intercontinental ballistic missile land somewhere, or if we end up seeing hundreds of thousands of South Koreans and hundreds of thousands of North Koreans die, you got to give a little bit of that credit. You know, maybe in the tens or 50,000s to David Frum.
Yes. The whole Republican ally thing is delusional in general, and just actually like offensive specifically with him.
Look, use him for what he's worth is one thing, but understand who you're dealing with.
And I don't know how much he's worth, frankly.
I don't know
either.
I mean,
what currency does he really have in the Republican Party?
So far, none. I think all it does is, you know, they can go on CNN or MSNBC, exactly, and make everybody feel like, oh, there are reasonable people in that party.
Exactly. He's actually just carrying water for a toxic brand.
Still.
Exactly. It's damaging. And his greatest legacy is making war with North Korea more likely. And also, not to mention the invasion we did do.
But they were the axis of evil.
Right. Two enemies, and one country that had nothing to do with either of them.
Well,
makes total sense.
That is
modern axis of evil.
That is the thing you don't understand, David Michael, Frum's, about evil. Evil can bring people together, even if they are enemies. We can be evil together. You can come into evil, stop by evil.
From
everybody,
the fucking halal of Iraq to the fucking halal of Iran to the evil little chopstick eaters of North Korea. It is evil. It's big league.
We don't care who you are. Just come in. If you're evil, you're evil. That's all we see. All we see is evil. We don't see any other difference.
And David Frum was like, white man's burden, invade the world, destroy international law, but maybe in the future Iraq will have some type of like pro-Israel petro state clash of civilizations guy. And now we have, why don't we just nuke them? Except for the Saudis. They're great.
Hey, can't we just...
Saudis are great.
How about it? I'll tell you what. I'll write to China on Twitter. Tell them to just do this.
Try a bit harder, guys.
Did you see that? I did see some footage of Jerry Brown got an official state. Like, he actually got to meet with the Chinese premier, like, which is pretty rare for like a governor. And they were just talking about climate change. And, you know, it's ridiculous to read too much of the body language. But there was this element of like, you could just see him sitting there and projecting onto him like, Jesus Christ,
we got a Buzz Aldrin body language video. We'll run that later in the program.
I don't think there's any projection in that one.
There's no sound.
That one's very clear.
Briefly, I don't want to spend too much time on this. It's just sort of stunning to me. Apparently, Mark Pincus, the guy who found the company that made Farmville.
Oh, this ass, yes.
Farmville is a is an app. It's like Candy Crush, but just not quite as big. And so he's got a ton of money. And then this guy, Reid Hoffman, who founded LinkedIn, has got a ton of money. And they have plans to rejuvenate the Democratic Party.
Oh, I bet what they're going to do is they're going to say that they should have a higher tax rate and we could use their money that they made from creating fake farms and a useless resume factory online to invest in infrastructure and national health insurance, right?
Do you remember we had those guys on from Kick the Can? I envision a new program of Kick the Can down the road.
I do remember that.
This is, they're they've created a... an organization called Win the Future, which, if you didn't know, is WTF, because of the kids. And it's a platform for crowdsourcing ideas that can sway the party in a new direction. And one of the amazing things is their whole premise is Democratic politicians haven't been responsible enough to ordinary Americans. And what they're looking for is also simultaneously a policy agenda rooted in fears that the party is already moving too far to the left. Oh my God. And he'd like it to make it more pro-business, like ordinary Americans must really want. Because businesses don't get enough. We need the ability to crowdsource everything. And Alex Lawson, who we've had on this program from Social Security Works, had a great quote. The weakness of the Democratic Party is not due to an underrepresentation of venture capitalists and tech company board members. Apparently, Pincus pitched Hoffman in 2015 to raise $1 billion on Kickstarter to get Michael Bloomberg elected.
All these people need to be locked in pyramids. They need to be. They need to just go.
Here's
away.
How I would raise $1 billion to get Michael Bloomberg elected. I would set up a Kickstarter, and then I would call Michael Bloomberg, and I'd say, "Hey,
what a plucky effort!
I've got one prize to unlock."
You know, as I grow across the country from Aruba vacation resorts, which I guess technically isn't in the country, but whatever. I'm talking about humans, after all. To the Upper East Side, to, at times, the Upper West Side, but not so much.
To
Westchester.
Aspen.
To Aspen, to Jackson Hole, with the occasional touchdown in Silicon Valley. I hear a cry for lower corporate expat taxes and to ban fat, disgusting slobs from Slurpees and guns. And it's that message that will take me to the White House.
Why are we wasting all of this time on self-driving cars? All of my cars are self-driving. I've never touched the steering wheel in months. Years.
Years. Sometimes traditional solutions can work.
The guy made...
They have sunk... This is what really annoys me. They have put $500,000 into Win the Future, which... It provides internet browsers the opportunity to support various policy proposals, including a demand that the government, quote, offer every American, you ready for this? A free engineering degree.
So selfless. It's not like Silicon Valley would have any self-interest in publicly subsidized degrees that specifically benefit their field. That's the type of selfless corporate citizenship that I'm talking about. Also,
free app game development courses for everyone as long as you then work on behalf of Farmville.
Do you
2.0.
have a hack to make virtual potato farms, son? Well, you too can get a free degree if you sign a lifelong contract to work for us for under market value.
There you go.
That's the other thing. It's
also
literally...
it promises to put the ideas that get the most backing. You ready for this? On billboards in Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's so brilliant, because that's where people will see. Do
yes,
you see?
But what we're going to do, those billboards will be digital.
They'll be
so when you go to work in the morning, it'll say cut corporate taxes. But when you go home at night, it'll say cut Social Security.
Now that's the carrot. The stick is something I call genocide for the 21st century, where we just slowly and gradually kill out a good chunk of the population that makes under $3 million a year.
They are also, we're contemplating campaigning against Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein.
Dianne Feinstein can't do enough for these people. They don't even know
they're
people
out of touch
supporting their own platforms.
We'd like to see either political outsiders or politicians who are ready to put the people ahead of their career. One of the political outsiders that Pincus is trying to recruit is Stefan Jenkins, frontman for the 1990s rock band Third Eye Blind. I'm starting to wonder if this is a real story. I gotta look this up because I'm starting to think I might have just been
that's
duped.
That's amazing.
No, I saw it. I saw it all over Twitter.
It's Daniel Mann.
All right, so let me just say there's a chance that this could be totally fake. And like maybe it was on a Huffington Post.
No, it was
maybe.
Daniel Marins, who is a fan of the show, actually wrote it.
It's well, the biggest maybe troll magnet.
Or maybe he's just doing
idea
it.
I've
did
ever
this
heard
just
of.
Show up on my browser? Is this maybe he's just. Check out our billboards, everybody!
Hey, this is why we're going to need to phase out Medicare a little bit.
If this launches, it should not be hard for the online left community to take over this platform immediately and have all the memes that are generated on it be like, let's seize the like all fossil fuels for the state
and
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that they also, there were two other things in the article. One was that I think it was this article. They haven't bought similar domain names, so they're ripe for the type of thing Matt's talking about.
Yes.
And then the other thing, I forget
what
who
is
said
it about
it, but
tech
the only,
people. The only tech people don't realize like you've got to buy the similar names for.
There's
something.
A
everybody
great,
knows that.
There's a well, apparently not the guy who made.
We tried to get WTF Pod. I think I probably own like multiple WTF ones just to try and get Marin's traffic.
I think
I bought those.
The other thing though,
when John Benjamin's television show came out, I bought HB.
Of course you did.
Wait, it's whatever JB8HV, and I was like, dude. If this thing goes well, looks like you're going to have to buy it from me.
I forget who said it. One of the people in the article, though, made a really... They were like, look, if you're so... Like, not that it will work, but, like, go waste your money inside the Republican Party. You know, like, the very least.
Right.
If you're, like, why don't you go try to address the party and say, like, look, you need to stop being embarrassing on social issues and acknowledge the science of global warming.
You'd have
and
to get a different
that,
front man.
You
what
would.
Band, what band leader would you have to get? I don't know.
Garth Brooks. Oh, wait, isn't he a Democrat? I don't know.
I don't know.
Real blue state bias in that comment
all
I just
right.
made.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. We're going to talk about Chris Christie. What?
How high did his approval ratings get?
He's at 15%.
No, but in his peak, whenever
probably
he was in
60,
the 70s, right?
Oh, I don't know if 70s, right. But 60s. We've got a clip of Bernie Sanders talking about Medicare for All. Tom Price pretending that there's a secret plan to mitigate the impact of the known healthcare plan.
And it has heart, right, Tom?
A wonderful clip of Donald Trump getting completely lost after he was deplaning.
Confusing.
We got pictures of Governor Christie, and we will... what happens? We will answer the question, what happens when NPR... actually tweets out the Declaration of Independence on the day in which we commemorate its adoption. You're never going to believe what happened next. All right, 646-257-3920. Folks, it is your support that makes this show possible. If you have the financial means to support this show, we really need you to. It is how we operate this program. You can go to jointhemajorityreport.com. A lot of you listen to the show for free. You've been listening for 3 months. Maybe you've been listening for 6 months, 9 months. Support the program. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you an option. You can listen to two and a half hours a day of stuff. You can listen to only the fun half stuff, which is funnier and funner. So, you know, maybe one day it's like, I don't know if I can handle listening to the 14th interview of the month about the intricacies of how we decided to formulate medical healthcare policy back in the 1930s. I think I'm just going to listen to the fun half today. People do that all the time. So if you have the financial means, please join themajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com, wherein you can join themajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And if you buy your crap from jet.com, if you buy your crap from amazon.com, do so through our links at majorityreportkickback.com. Every time you buy through there, you will notice no difference, but we get a kickback. See you in the fun half.
Sad. She said no.